You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have with me once again Kevin Duffy. For those of you who may not know Kevin, he is the principal of Baring Asset Management, which was co-founded in 2002. The firm manages Baring Core Fund. That's a contrarian macro-themed hedge fund with a flexible mandate. Baring gained notoriety during the Great Financial Crisis by betting against stocks like New Century Financial, Fannie Mae, Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, and Kevin wrote extensively on the housing and credit bubble, identifying root causes of the bubble. A month later, he issued a warning in an op-ed for Barron's titled, "For Whom Do the Bells Toll?" And the Baring Credit Bubble Index was cited by Mark Faber in his speeches in the Gloom, Boom, and Doom report, which is very well known by Mark Faber. So prior to Baring, Kevin co-founded Lighthouse Capital Management and served as the director of research 1988 to 1999. He chronicled the excesses of the Japan and technology bubbles of late 1980s and late 1990s, respectively. The firm was later sold to Fisher Investments. So you can see that Kevin has had an extensive background. He's been able to notice and identify bubbles earlier than most people. And, you know, when everybody was saying, don't worry, this time it's different, Kevin wasn't seeing the difference and obviously benefited in a down market. So we're really happy to have him, especially now when things are looking increasingly shaky right now in the financial markets. Thanks for joining me again, Kevin.
Thanks for having me back on, Jay.
Yeah, it's always good to hear from you. We probably should do it more often. Before we get started, can you tell our listeners a little bit about your service? You do manage money, and what kind of investors are attracted to your service?
Yes. So with Baring, we run the Baring Core Fund, and it's open to accredited investors. I think the most important thing is to have an alignment in terms of taking a very long-term view. We try to take a flexible strategy. We're not necessarily trying to hit any home runs in any given environment, but try to survive the current environment, the bubble environment that I believe that we're in, and set ourselves up for opportunities that will come along over the next several years. Mm-hmm. as people panic, I think mm-hmm. that's what we're heading into, is a series of panics.
With regard to your newsletter, the Coffee Can Portfolio, the Coffee Can Portfolio is your newsletter. I think every other month you publish it, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And people can, where can they go to subscribe to that?
They can go to the website. It's thecoffeecanportfolio.com. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of information on the site.
And the site as well. And yes, your charges, it's a pretty modestly priced newsletter, I believe. So,
right. It's $109, and that entitles you to six issues a year, mm-hmm. and also any trading alerts. And we don't do a lot of trading. It's very long-term oriented, right. Not a lot of turnover.
Right. Okay, well, let's get into maybe we start out by asking, what bubbles are you seeing now, and how do they compare with some of the last bubbles that you were successful in identifying?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, one of the things that I heard this on a podcast, Diego Paria, I believe is his name, mm-hmm. Talked about the fact that bubbles have they rest on a false belief system, mm-hmm. Or a misconception. And so I think what we've had here is a series of bubbles. Let's start with 2000, with the tech bubble, mm-hmm. and the bubble there was really in the idea of first mover advantage. It really wasn't the internet bubble, it wasn't the .com bubble, but it was the idea that If you had staked out a claim that you were going to survive and you were going to benefit from it, that was the bubble. Mm-hmm. The next bubble was the housing and the credit bubble. The misconception there was that real estate always went up, or that any declines in real estate would be regional. And then the bubble today, I think the underlying misconception is this idea that the government is the solution to all problems. It can solve all problems. So this bubble is much broader than the previous two bubbles. And, you know, it's been called the everything bubble. But I think if you think about that common misconception, then the first thing that I think we need to focus on is what's happening in the bond market. That's probably a pretty good tell that the bond market peaked, I believe, last August. And this year, the TLT, which is mm-hmm. has about an average maturity of 20 years, is down 13%. So, you know, one of the aspects of bubbles that, and we can get into this, I'm sure, but you know, you start to see the this common misconception. It gets challenged, and it's in some of the more marginal areas where you get the first warning cracks. Mm-hmm. So the fact that bonds, that U.S. government bonds are starting to bleed, is that's a sign. That's something that we need to be concerned about.
So the government bonds, what about the junk bonds, the riskier things? How are they doing?
The riskier things have held up much better so far. And, you know, Jay, you asked about what are some of the other areas. You know, I look at this everything bubble. At the core of it is a government bubble. Very different. You know, you've had this huge increase in government debt. Mm-hmm. As opposed to the last bubble, was this increase in mortgage debt. I believe it doubled in a period of about 5 or 6 years. So, you know, at the center of this, at the epicenter, is really this government, this bond bubble. But then on the edges, we've had all these other bubbles that have taken place. You know, you have corporate bonds, you have high yield bonds, which are now low yield bonds. You have cryptocurrencies, I think non-fungible tokens, SPACs, you know, the money losing IPOs. 80% of the IPO crop are losing money, similar to 2000. So, you know, those are the types of things. I think, you know, neomania is another thing that you see, this infatuation. You know, bubbles tend to attract younger people, and mm-hmm. Younger people, they don't have the gray hairs that you and I do, and so they're not held back by that. And there's a very strong belief in anything that's new right now. That's another aspect of this bubble.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of young kids are coming in for the first time, and they're taking their $2,000 checks or whatever they get from the government and gambling with them in the markets, I guess, too, right?
Yeah, I know you hear so many anecdotes, you know, friends whose daughters are in college and they're, you know, they're wanting to borrow money from daddy so that they can day trade. And it's just, you know, it's kind of head scratching. But this is where we are. You know, after a long bull market, we get, and of course, it's been backed by this belief in the Fed put, mm-hmm. conditioning that's been taking place over a decade that you can't lose. I mean, all you have to do is front run the Fed, and it's a no lose situation. So right now, everything has gone parabolic. I was going to say it's going parabolic, but that's really past tense. I mean, it mm-hmm. went parabolic, and the height of the frenzy was really in mid February, mm-hmm. and you know, we've had, whether anybody is paying attention or not, we've had a extreme bear market, or at least call it a correction, an extreme correction in the most speculative areas over the last 3 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess we have. And, you know, as you say, it's that Fed put. Now, so people are putting their faith in government, and government, I guess they include in their minds the Federal Reserve to finance everything. We're you know, you said that the at the center of this, at the epicenter, is the government bonds, the treasuries. And as I look at it, Kevin, you know, for the longest time, for decades after we went off the gold standard and started counterfeit money policies, we could get away with it because foreigners were willing to buy treasuries. And now as I look at the data, it seems as though that's no longer the case. It seems like the only real serious buyers of U.S. treasuries right now is the Federal Reserve and pension funds, a little bit banks, tiny, tiny bit of individuals. So doesn't that mean that all the trillions of dollars that the Biden administration is spending now are going to have to continue to be financed by printing press money, or interest rates are going to rise, and that's going to be, you know, probably wreak havoc on the asset markets, or interest rates rise and they print a lot of money anyway, maybe like the 1970s. I remember it very well. You're a lot younger than I, but I remember it very well as a young person, the double-digit inflation of the 1970s. There, interest rates were rising. Gold was going up even faster. The Fed was behind the curve. Interest rates were going up, but not as fast as inflation. Do you think that's a scenario that could that we might be looking at, like a 1970s type of scenario?
I think we have a number of possible scenarios, and that's what makes it very interesting and challenging as investors. I mean, I can see the inflationary scenario, which is certainly seems to be playing out right now. I also see the possibility of this massive bubble bursting, which would be, in some respects, almost deflationary. It would mm-hmm. certainly be asset deflationary. Mm-hmm. And so what I see is, you know, first of all, there's been this, the marketing push by the Fed has been to let people know that we're in control.
Yeah.
And what seems to be happening right now is that it's almost like the French Revolution and Robespierre thinking he can control the mob, and the mob is now in control. Mm-hmm. Or you could say the mob is out of control. I mean, the mob is really going from one panicky situation to another. And so I think we've already seen the sort of the wheels come off the wagon here. And what I see is a series of panics. And, you know, we had this, let's go back to last year when the pandemic hit. And we, you know, first of all, we got a panic in the stock market, down 33% or so in the S&P 500. There was also a sort of that knee-jerk panic into bonds, into the U.S. dollar. Mm-hmm. There was a panic in terms of the April crude oil contract settling at negative $40 a barrel. You know, so we've gone from that panic, and we had panic buying of toilet paper, and now we have panic hoarding of gasoline in the Southeast. You know, we're going from one extreme to the other. So it's kind of like the car going down the highway, and it's raining out, and it's swerving, and the swerves are getting more and more extreme. Mm-hmm. And at some point, you know, this thing's just going to start doing 360s. So that's what I think could happen, Jay. I mean, it's hard to really predict, but other than the fact that I think we're losing control, and I think that investors and the mob they panicked into just these garbage stocks 3 months ago. Could we get a panic on the other side? You know, we've got a 70% increase in margin debt over the last year.
Incredible.
So that tells you that the crowd is positioned for asset inflation. Well, what happens if we get asset deflation? There's going to be a panic. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think we will see that. I think we will see a panic there. I think that we could, you know, Jay Powell talks about inflation being transitory. Maybe some of the real craziness of this, you know, lumber prices going up mm-hmm. fourfold or whatever they are year to date. You know, it's just crazy stuff, adding huge costs to the cost of a home. You know, we could see maybe a bursting of some of these little bubbles, mm-hmm. but then, you know, I could envision an extreme bear market, panics and all the rest of it. And then there could be a panic in terms of the Fed print more money. I don't know how many trillions of dollars they could print, but you know, we may get a severe bear market, and then we may get a panic on the Fed, and then we may get a panic out of fiat at some point.
Yeah.
In that order, I don't know. I mean, I'm just throwing it out there.
Oh, sure.
But it's that's what I think we're going to get, though. It's just a series of panics and the Fed losing control, and then ultimately at the end of this, the Fed will be disgraced.
It
and
just
hopefully
seems
replaced.
Well, it depends on what that's replaced with, I suppose. But, you know, be careful what you wish for sometimes when things seem so bad, from the frying pan into the fire, however that's put. I just have to think, I wonder, you know, how high interest rates can go before things start falling apart or start to implode in the equity markets, in the bond market, you know. And to what extent, if you know, the huge deficits that the Fed has to finance, shouldn't be the Fed, but they don't allow interest rates to go to the level that would clear the markets. I mean, God only knows where the interest rates would have to go to clear the market.
Right.
I mean, with you know, it could have to be much, much higher than it is.
Yeah.
And there's no way. I mean, if you look back at what, you know, sort of like get up to 2.5% or so on the 10-year, it seems like maybe there's problems. So where are we now? We're 1.65 or something like that, I think I saw.
So, well, I think we always have to be careful not to be fighting the last war, and we have to remember that the Fed has learned. Of course, they've learned all the wrong lessons, but they've learned from past experience, which is never raise rates to burst a bubble. So I don't see where short-term rates, at least via the Fed's hand, are going to be the pin that pricks this bubble, number one. Okay? Mm-hmm. But they don't control the whole yield curve. So I think that's why we need to be paying a lot more attention to longer term rates. The other thing that I think we can pay attention to is that if we go back over the last two bubbles and then compare to this bubble, what we got in 2000 was we got a warning crack. There's always the marginal area, you know, the diciest area that gets taken to the woodshed. And, you know, we had that in February and March of 2000 with the dot-com bubble, right? That bubble bursts, and then all summer the market rallies back, and there's this feeling that, okay, the worst is over, this is all contained, and you know, we learned our lesson, let's just buy Sun Microsystems and Cisco and Oracle and we'll be fine. And then of course that was the false rally, and then everything fell apart after that. Then we have 2007. You had the first crack was in the subprime market, and those stocks got destroyed. I mean, they got just about wiped out. And this was also coincidentally in February and March of 2007. Again, what did we get? This is contained. Don't worry. And this is healthy. It's a healthy correction. Okay.
Yeah.
Fast forward the tape to today. We had the same thing, the peak in these meme stocks and these highly speculative stocks, GameStop and that sort of thing. That was in February. We've already had a pretty healthy correction, you know, the ARK Innovation ETF. You know, this stuff is down. You look at our top 10 holdings, they're all down 30 to 50%.
Wow.
So I think that's telling us something, and I think we need to pay attention. My guess is that we'll see a similar type of action where – you know, and we've had this marginal new high in the broad averages.
Yes.
But everybody's saying, hey, this is healthy. They're not. Nobody seems to be concerned about this. But I think that's what we need to put on a radar at this point.
All right. So while everybody is expecting inflation now, they're fearful of it. And I'm seeing a lot of different people like Druckenmiller the other day on CNBC talking about his concerns about the dollar and about the Fed not being able to just – having to print so much money. You're saying that's sort of fighting the last war. Let's try to keep an open mind about what could be happening. And so with just a couple of minutes left here yet, I wanted to get into your portfolio, but people should actually go to and subscribe to the newsletter that you have every stock listed, the stocks that you're looking at. I mean, I'm looking at here's one thing with just about a minute left. ASA Limited, it seems like that's one of your favorite gold plays. Why is that?
Yeah, well, there has been a change in management. They outsourced management to Merck Investments. They instead of being basically a copy of GDX, they decided to focus on the earlier development and production, smaller production companies, and sort of carve out that niche. It trades at a significant discount to NAV. It trades at about a 13% discount. Wow. And they've put up some great numbers over the last year, up about 60%. Fees are coming down. I think that it's a closed-end fund, and I think it can trade right now that 13% discount with the niche that they have. I think that can go away and maybe go to a premium. So, you know, you've got some optionality there and some leverage.
All right, very good. We'll have to leave it go at that, Kevin. Thank you so much for being with us. Very entertaining, very informative, and we'll have to do it again sometime soon. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you, Jay.
All right, folks. Well, that is it for this week. Next week, my main guest will be Michael Oliver, and Lynn Alden will be with me. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.